That was pianist John Lewis playing Bach, the prelude in G from Book One of The Well-Tempered Clavier, done in what's known as third stream style. First, he played it straight, as you'd expect, and then he morphed the piece into a jazz improvisation, and then he returned to the original work. That style of jazz, known as third stream, a combination of classical and jazz, the term was coined by my guest, Günter Schuller. Good afternoon, sir.
Good afternoon.
I'm also joined by University of Illinois Professor of Horn, Bernard Scully. Good afternoon, Bernard.
Good afternoon to you.
Günter Schuller is the George A. Miller Artist in Residence. From now until September 19th, he'll be giving a MillerCom lecture on the 18th at 7:30 at the Spurlock Museum. And his visit culminates with a performance of his quintet for horn and strings featuring Bernard Scully and the Jupiter String Quartet on September 19th at 7:30 p.m. as part of the Allerton Music Barn Festival. Glad to have you here, gentlemen. Let's start with the MillerCom lecture. I understand it's not going to be a typical lecture. What's the plan?
Which lecture?
The MillerCom lecture on the
18th. Next week.
Yeah.
What's the subject? I don't know.
It's
the
called
name.
A Life in Me. Well, that's, yeah. That's the
well,
point.
Bernard, if you want to answer this.
Sure.
Okay.
Well, when we were first talking, you said, well, I've done so many things in my life.
Oh, the conversation.
And, yeah, it's essentially going to be a conversation.
Oh, yeah,
That's why lecture is an inappropriate title for it, probably.
Yeah.
So.
Indeed,
I've done so many things in my long life and all very exciting and interesting, and I've been so lucky and blessed. And there's just a lot to talk about. I mean, I ended up having seven careers simultaneously for the last 60 years. Well, who the hell has done that?
Only you.
Leonard Bernstein only had
that's
four.
True.
And I loved Lenny. But anyway, so there's a lot to talk about. And when people ask me, what do you want to lecture about? I say, look, I've done a lot of lecturing. Let's just talk about my life and then let's open it up to the audience.
Yeah.
That's
oh,
the main
good.
Thing. Because I can answer any question that might come up. I'm saying that not braggingly. I just,
no.
You know,
no,
I've done it all.
You've seen a lot.
we understand that.
Yeah, so that's it.
Well, I asked that because I knew that ahead of time because I read it, but our audience perhaps might not have known. They'd hear the word lecture and they say, I really want to go hear some guy talk about music? It's not even going to be that. You're going to converse and talk about all the great things and exciting things you've been involved in.
By the way, I predict that the first question will be, how was it playing with Miles Davis?
From the audience, you mean, or from me?
Oh,
yeah.
Oh, absolutely.
Oh, absolutely.
It's happened already.
Oh,
50
why
times.
Not? Well, we'll get to that. How's that? Let me ask you another question here, and this one is more broadly related to how you made all these sorts of transitions and had these parallel careers. How did you make the progression from professional horn player to the creation of the Modern Jazz Society and then to all the other things that followed? What happened in what order?
Well, it's not mysterious at all. I mean, I come from a German family. I'm born in New York, and my father was a great violinist, played in the New York Philharmonic, for 42 years and all of that. So I grew up as a classical musician. But if you're born in America, when I sort of got into my teen years, if you were born in America, you're going to hear jazz. And while some people may have rejected jazz at that time, when I heard the thing that absolutely turned me on to how great jazz was in the hands of its greatest practitioners was when one night on the radio at 11:15 from the Hurricane Club in New York, there was Duke Ellington's orchestra. That changed my life. So it's a good question, but to me there was nothing strange about that, although when I told my father the next day that I had the most incredible musical experience last night, and this is great music, and Pop, that music that they play, Ellington's orchestra, that's as great as and important as Beethoven. Well, the poor man almost had a heart attack, but then when he realized that I did not abandon classical music, he was okay. And then, of course, when I became very famous in the jazz world and made a lot of money, then he said...
Then he came around. It reminds me of the story of Charles Ives, I guess, was a fellow who said that it was more the substance of the music rather than the style. He said, you know, a good rag was as good as a symphony was as good as, well, by extrapolation, jazz. You know, I don't know how much jazz he heard, but absolutely so. Coming up is you're here in town for these series of events, but what I understand is perhaps the most exciting event is the recording and performance of your new quintet for horn and strings.
Yeah.
Would you care to talk about that? Which is more exciting, the performance or the recording?
Which is more what?
Exciting. Making the recording or making
Depends
the
performance? Depends on the performance. I don't know.
Well, you see.
No, I mean, I've already had one rehearsal coaching with the Jupiter Quartet and with Bernard. It was very good last night, and it's going to be very good. But look, you know, there's no performance that is absolutely 10,000% perfect.
Absolutely.
So we, all musicians, when you compliment them, many of them that are really honest and say, they'll say, yeah, but, you know, wasn't quite. So who knows what's going to happen? But, I mean, it's going to be fully representative of what I wrote.
Mm-hmm.
You know, these are terrific musicians, all five of them.
Indeed. And the musicians we're talking about are the members.
I mean, the
members...
recording, you can, if you want to piddle around and perfect some tiny little something that nobody will hear except maybe the composer, I mean, why bother? You know,
it's... Totally understand. So, let's see, the recording is taking place during the week, this week, as you prepare for the live performance at the Allerton Barn Music Festival on next Thursday. Is that right?
Yeah,
next Thursday
19th,
at 7:30. Yep. Yeah. And there will be, for those who don't know, a pre-concert talk at 6:30 that you'll be talking about that particular piece. Question that I don't, I had the listings here, what's... you guys are going to play. Are you actually going to play all three of the works on the 19th, Mr. Schuller's, and then the Brahms and the Mozart's?
No,
those are part of the recording project.
Yeah, that's the recording project, is the Mozart Quintet, which was, as you say, the inspiration for your quintet, correct?
Yes.
And then the Brahms Trio as well for horn, violin, and piano. And then on the 19th, that concert is... it's essentially a Jupiter concert. They're doing what's called Jupiter Plus One.
Mm-hmm.
It was a competition they had at school for piano for the Franck Quintet for strings
there
and
it
piano.
Is, yeah.
The person who won that will play with the Jupiter Quartet as well.
Huh.
And then our piece, and then another piece, which I actually cannot remember right now.
But. Let's see. It says the Mozart String Quartet in D, Kerschel 575.
Must be it.
Yeah, that. And then Gunther's piece, the Quintet for Horn and Strings, and then the César Franck Quintet with Wuna Meng piano, if I'm pronouncing that properly.
Yep.
So that should be an exciting program. We'll get back, actually, to the events at the Allerton Music Barn Festival. Shall we listen to some music? Mozart, Brahms, preference?
Maybe the first movement of the Mozart or something. The last movement.
Yes, Mozart. That sounds good. Give me a second to cue this up here. These machines are pretty darn quick, and thank goodness for that. That's sure faster than the Mac I work with out at the college. Oh, I'm not a fan of Macs, but hey, let me not tackle that here. So we're going to track 3, and this is the finale to the Mozart Quintet in E-flat K452. Our players, Alfred Brendel, Heinz Holliger, Edward Brunner, Hermann Baumann, and Klaus
Tuning. No, this is not
correct. Sorry. Whoops.
You should use my CD because that's the piano quintet.
This is the piano quintet?
You mentioned Alfred Brendel.
Which one are we looking for here?
We're looking for the horn quintet.
Oh, I am so sorry.
Sorry.
I did. Which would be which recording?
There's a recording. Here, I have it right here.
Oh, okay. Well, let me take it out of there. This is the beauty of live radio, folks. You just never know what's going to happen. We love it. There you go.
There you go.
Great. Now, what's my track number?
It is track 9.
9. May I have the CD?
Give him the CD.
Thanks, man. Alrighty. Music of Mozart, the Quintet in E-flat, Kurzweil 407 with the Berlin Soloists. Let's go for the Rondo, eh?
Finale? Sure.
Rondo finale it is. And away we go. Enjoy Mozart while we think about what we'll talk about next. This is Live and Local. I'm Vincent Trouth, filling in for Kevin Kelly today. My guests are Gunter Schuller and Bernard Scully. Was the finale to the Mozart Quintet in E-flat for horn and strings. Kurzweil 407, the Berlin soloists there, and the horn soloist, Radovan Vlatkovic, with the other players in that. It's on a Telarc disc that Bernard Scully brought for us to listen to. My guests today, Gunter Schuller and U of I horn professor Bernard Scully. I'm Vincent Strahl, filling in today for Kevin Kelly on Live and Local. Tell you what, gents, I need to do some business here, as it were. They say we have business to tend to. Let me take a moment here. Take WILL with you anywhere you go. If you have an iPhone, iPad, or Android device, the new WILL app is free and allows you to stream our AM and FM stations, listen to past episodes of your favorite programs on demand, and much more. For more information about how to find the WILL radio app in the App Store or Google Play, visit our website at will.illinois.edu. WILL programming is made possible by Krannert Center for the Performing Arts, opening the Classical Mix Series with the Jupiter String Quartet and guests the Jasper Quartet Thursday, September 12th at 7:30 p.m. That would be tonight, featuring Felix Mendelssohn's brilliant octet. More information is at KrannertCenter.com. Well, having just heard the Mozart Quintet, we were chatting while the music was on about this being the inspiration for your quintet, Mr. Schuller. Would you care to tell us how it was an inspiration beyond the fact that Mozart's inspiring on his own?
Well, I played that piece many times when, you know, in the past, 100 years ago, and I loved it so much. It's such wonderful, pure Mozart, and it isn't that I was inspired by it to do some kind of emulation of it. No, I mean, I write in a language that's 200 years later. But somehow, some of the lightness and happiness of that piece is in some places in my new quintet. But of course, I'm a modern composer. This happens to be that horrible thing that many people don't like, atonal music, you know.
But there's dissonance?
Pardon?
There's dissonance in your work?
Oh, well, no, I'm just
I'm teasing.
Being realistic. I love atonal music, and many people do, but a lot of people say, well that's terrible music.
Understood.
Let's go back to Mozart. So, but anyway, and I did one little joke in the piece, which no one would hear or know unless, you might want to listen to it, but don't listen to it like, where's that thing that Gunter talked about? I happened to take the first 10 notes in the horn part that Mozart wrote, and I call it 12-tonized them. I turned them atonal. And even Bernard did not recognize it when I asked him, do you know what that is? And I presented it as an echo. It's uh-huh. way, it's like far away, you know. But don't try to listen for it because you'll miss the whole damn piece.
Yeah, yeah. They you have to be careful of that, of course.
In three movements, and it has some of the music is quite modern, you know, but I use some of the triplets that Mozart wrote, some of the rhythms that Mozart wrote, but you know they're modernized a little bit, so that's no big deal, you know. That's what we all do nowadays.
Yeah, here's a question I think some people might be interested. I surely am. So as the interviewer, I'll ask. Was composing music a natural consequence of being a player or teacher or both? And I ask because I play and I teach music, but I'm not inclined to compose.
Yeah. Well, my case is very interesting. I'm sort of glad you asked that question, because the first thing that I wanted to do, and I was already 11 years old, so this is very late to be interested in music. Mm-hmm. You know, Mozart started at four, and many, many other geniuses, and Mendelssohn, and so on. No, I wanted to compose. Now, most would-be musicians, they play an instrument. I didn't. So the answer to your question, I first wanted to compose. It had nothing to do with... But then I became... First I played the flute, and then I switched to the horn. So, and then I did everything. But I started with... And I have no idea why 1 week before Christmas in 1936, I suddenly had this impulse to compose something. It's weird.
I'll go with you on this one. In the secular world, people would say, it's serendipity. In the spiritual world, we say that there's a connection to the greater things in life.
Mind you, the context for this and the background is that as I've already mentioned, my father was a violinist, very great musician. My mother was quite musical, not a professional. And so I heard music most of my childhood, but it somehow didn't take until I was 11 years.
Interesting.
Which is a little weird, because if you're surrounded and your parents have taken you to Carnegie Hall concerts of the New York Philharmonic, you would think that something would say, hey, I want to do that. What finally happened about me wanting to play an instrument was in Carnegie Hall, we were sitting up in the fifth balcony, and the first flutist in the orchestra at that time, John Ammons, had gotten himself the first gold flute. Now we have a lot of gold flutes. Mm-hmm. And I'm sitting up there, and the stage lights in the ceiling of Carnegie Hall made this gold flute shine most wonderfully. And I thought, that's the greatest thing. I want to play that. And that's how I became a...
that's a tremendous story, because I don't want to... I'll make a funny joke here. I hope that men, we're so Neanderthal. Ooh, shiny. It caught our eye, but it caught our ear as well, so...
Yeah.
Oh, goodness gracious. Great story. Shall we listen to some of your compositions?
Yeah.
This one here comes from... The Birth of the Third Stream. Now, do me a favor. I teach kids music appreciation. I teach them jazz, and we run across your name in our books as the creator with John Lewis, Modern Jazz Society. This third stream notion, the notion of third stream music. And,
yeah. You
know, my book explains it one way, and I hope it's right. What do you mean exactly by third stream music?
Oh,
I think
very,
I have my understanding.
It's very simple. When I grew up and became aware of jazz and had already been involved with classical music, and critics and writers about music were beginning to use mainstream.
Mm-hmm.
Handoff invented that phrase. But anyway, so you have a mainstream of music, let's call it classical, and then the other mainstream in America, jazz,
absolutely,
which was created on this soil by black musicians. That's our one great contribution, original
truly
contribution. Everything else in America was imported in
right
some way or other. Like we were all imported. So anyway, I was so upset that the two worlds of music, classical and jazz, they were both equally featured. That is to say, 50% of American people loved jazz, and 50 people loved classical music. But guess what? They didn't talk to each other.
Yeah.
They hated each other. And that was mainly racially determined.
It was. Yeah.
Because the classical people could not understand that jazz was any kind of a great music. But so I said, this is wrong. We got to do something. And I was therefore interested in bringing the two musics together. And I started to giving lectures saying this crazy thing. You know, Ellington's music is just as great as Beethoven's. A lot of people got upset. Some people, yeah. Mm-hmm. And then it developed, and I was one of the first to then write music which brought the two music. What piece are you going to play?
Transformation.
Yeah. See, that's a piece. It's the perfect third stream example, one of many different ways of doing that. But it starts out completely classical. Mm-hmm. You would never know that that has anything to do with jazz. It's a passacaglia, mm-hmm. which is a classical. It's a Klangfarben melody, which is a term for melodies where the melody is divided between all the instrumentalist gets only one part of the melody, mm-hmm. dissecting it.
Absolutely.
If there's 12 notes, then their 12 players will each have their one note. It's like dovetailing. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that's totally classical. Now, then gradually it evolves, and the jazz sneaks in very subtly. At first you were, wow, there's a little lick from the drummer, and here's a little boom, boom, boom from the bass. Mm-hmm. And then it turns fully into jazz, and then Bill Evans plays a great solo, and then the vibraphone solo. And then at the end of the piece, I had this idea of bringing the two worlds really together in this way. I decided I'm going to create a battle between swing rhythms and classical rhythms. They're
so
totally different.
Swing versus straight, as it were.
And I sort of did that. I thought of Stravinsky's classical rhythms. They're modern, of course. And the swing rhythms of the swing era. So, and the juxtapositions of classical rhythm and jazz get closer and closer till finally the musics actually get together and they end up happily as friends.
Excellent explanation. Let's listen to that. This is music of Günter Schuller. And he explained how third stream music works. It's called Transformation on WILL. It's live and local. I'm Vincent Trout filling in today for Kevin Kelly. 428, it's 83 degrees outside. Music of Günter Schuller, Transformations, off a compact disc originally, LP, called The Birth of the Third Stream. And it looks like it's still available on the Columbia Legacy label. And I believe those are handled at iTunes, for those of you who buy your music that way. My guest today, I'm Vincent Trauf, by the way, filling in for Kevin Kelly. It's live and local on FM 90.9. We're here Monday through Friday at 4 o'clock, 4 till 5, talking with musicians and others about music. Günter Schuller is my guest. He'll be in town from now until the 19th, here as the George A. Miller Comm Artist in Residence. And while we were listening to that piece, we were talking about where do we go from here? The recording project that Günter Schuller is overseeing and that Professor Scully is performing on is, of course, involving Günter Schuller's new quintet for horn and strings. And then the Mozart horn trio that we heard, or quintet that we heard a little bit earlier. And then this Brahms trio, as it were. And Bernard, you were talking about how this all came about.
Well, originally it came about because I got the good fortune of playing his quintet a number of years ago before I came to the university. I was up in St. Paul. It was with the Chamber Music Society of Minnesota. We had a concert, and he came in, and he worked with us for the whole week and ended up actually conducting the performance of the quintet, and it was a very positive event for me. It was a real I think one of the highlights of my performing career in my life. It just was so enjoyable to work with Günter and also with my colleagues, and to play such a great piece, in that it just really pushed the boundaries. So after it was done, I just kept in contact with him, and I thought, you know, it'd be really cool to record this piece if it hasn't been recorded yet. And then we started talking, well, we should definitely pair it with the Mozart because it was the inspiration. Mm-hmm. And then also came up of the Brahms trio because of the greatness of that piece. I mean, if you're gonna put these great chamber works on, why not put another great chamber work on, you know? And but not only have it be just another recording, I mean, there are certainly some very fine recordings. We're going to listen to one of them, of that piece, you know, throughout the ages. And oftentimes these recordings or these performances are simply three players that sit down and say, well, this is how we're going to play. We're just going to feel it out, and here we go, and which is usually pretty great. But at the same time, the piece is so vast, and, you know, Gunther Schuller is essentially an expert in, you know, the music of Brahms and almost every music from his study as a scholar, composer, and as a player. So I thought, well, maybe let's have this be a bit more informed of a recording. So let him take the helm a bit interpretationally. So this can not only be a, you know, a confluence of great players, but also an interesting collaboration with, you know, a true master of this music. So,
shall we listen to some of the Brahms?
Sure, maybe the second movement.
Yeah, second movement. We got Scherzo, our performers, Jack Gorodetsky violin, John Barrows horn, and Archer Balsam piano. Music of Brahms from the Trio for Horn, Violin, and Piano, the Opus 40 on Live and Local, 7:38 our time. Scherzo, second movement from the Brahms Horn Trio, Trio for Violin, Horn, and Piano in E-flat, the Opus 40. Jack Gorodetsky violin, John Barrows horn, Archer Balsam, the pianist, a recording made at the Coolidge Auditorium Library of Congress April 10, 1952. That makes that recording 4 years older than me. So there's only two other things older in this room than me, and it would be Gunther Schuller and this recording, right? What else do I have on my list here? My gosh, you answered my question, how did your jazz come out of the classical playing last time around when you talked about how classical was its own corner and jazz was in its own corner and they didn't want to meet, and you said, well, let's make them meet together here. My interest, I think, it's as we get towards the end here, if I could ask the question, do you derive more pleasure from, say, the master classes that are upcoming, or the forums?
The master classes?
Yeah, you have one master class coming up with the horn students, then you got a bunch of other forums on conducting and all that.
There's no big difference. I make everything into a sharing experience and a conversation. Mm-hmm. It's not a professorial lecture, you know, and all that
stuff. I can tell that
by
from
the way,
sitting lost.
I want to say about my seven careers.
Please.
Simultaneously, you know, people have asked me many times, and an interesting question, a good question. Well, didn't all those different things conflict in your life, you know? I said, no, quite the opposite. I was fructified by getting involved with the techniques of making recordings, because that taught me things that previously I wasn't totally stupid about it, but I hadn't really done it. Mm-hmm. So they all finally come together. And so they enrich each other, you see. And that's very hard for people to believe, because actually very few people do even more than one career.
Indeed.
You know, most pianists are pianists, period.
Indeed.
And, you know.
Yeah, so
but
let's see.
I had this other thing that somehow I take no claim being original in this, but that was the way my education and my brain and my intelligence and whatever it is led me to do. I got to do all these things. It's all so great, you know.
And indeed, they're all related. They're all musical.
Yeah.
I just wanted to say that that's one of the, you know, along with the recording, which is the big bonus, but that's one of the primary reasons we wanted to bring him in, because your career ties in every single aspect of our music school. You know, he's speaking to all the different, you know, larger parts of our school of music. Yeah. And he's done all of these things at an extraordinarily high level. You know, I think that's one thing that's distinguished you maybe from others, is that not just that you had seven careers, but each of the careers has been at the pinnacle level, whether it's performing, composing, conducting,
writing,
historian,
books,
whatever
yeah.
it is, administrator, you know, these, and then the recording things you've founded, you know, the recording company and the publishing company.
Yeah, two publishing companies.
Two publishing companies. They've all been at the highest level. And so I would say, you know, one of the things we're trying to focus on our students right now with the ever-changing world of music. I mean, our world is changing fast to begin with, but you know, the arts are changing because of technology and all these things. And one of the things we're trying to get our students to focus on, one thing that I thought about very much in the last, you know, number of years since I've been out there, is entrepreneurship. You know, the idea of having multiple skills, being able to utilize all sorts of skills to accomplish your goals, and not being afraid just to go after it, because you can't just lock yourself into one thing that's very risky. You know, and I think that he's a perfect example of someone who's seen the highest level of success because you just went after everything. You
know? And it makes sense.
You can say that. I can't say it.
Well, you've lived it, so you know it. I was trying to figure out what all seven were, and so let me get your careers right. Composition, performance, conducting, writing of books, the historian, I suppose, fits in that, administrator, recording.
Yeah.
It's endless, but
jazz artist.
Jazz artist. There you go. I missed that.
And writer of books.
Mm-hmm. Right. Mentioned that as well.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm curious, as all get outs, and maybe you can answer this for me. How did you come? I get that classical and your interest in jazz, and how could you possibly ignore it in America? How did you get involved with creating the Ragtime Ensemble, and then, for me personally and others interested, orchestrating Joplin's opera Treemonitia? So that Houston Grand Opera could put that on. I mean, I know about that.
Well, the answer is very simple. There was no orchestration,
absolutely,
so it couldn't be performed.
Exactly. Piano score only.
Joplin, after he had written the opera, he spent his own money, and
right,
he finally ran out of money,
yeah,
and soon after that he died. Mm. But anyway, he published a piano reduction, and if we didn't have that, that opera would be lost.
Indeed.
And I discovered it, you know, early on because of my studies in jazz, because ragtime was the music that came before jazz.
Absolutely, that's
so.
What
I said, "Wow, this guy, black man, wrote an opera in 1900. Yeah, black man was supposed to write an opera."
Exactly.
And I said, and then I looked at the music in the publication, and then it came around interest. I talked about it, and eventually money was gotten up for me to make an orchestration and then to premiere it at the Houston Opera.
Mm-hmm.
And then on Broadway, we mm-hmm. played it in the Palace Theater for months. And no, because it's what we call a period piece.
Yes.
It has its sort of beautiful little simplicities. And it's a little naive at times, mm-hmm. particularly in the libretto. He made his own libretto. On the other hand, it's so wonderfully done for that time. After all, it's just at the very beginning of the 20th century. It didn't pretend to be, you know, ragingly modern music.
Right.
It comes out of a style of an influence, perhaps, of Mozart and of classical music of the time, which he heard.
He was very fond of Chopin.
I mean, this guy grew up in Arkansas mm-hmm. somewhere, and how the heck?
Well, my understanding, he had a German music teacher
yeah,
who taught him violin
true.
And piano and theory, and clearly yeah. Joplin was incredibly talented, and the way he was yeah. able to meld the sort of the syncopations of black music with yeah. the music of Chopin and Liszt and Mozart that he loved, it's truly amazing. So let me take a minute and just take care of some business here. Today's broadcast made possible in part by a grant from the Meredith Foundation dedicated to supporting the musical arts in performance and presentation. WILO programming is made possible by Krannert Art Museum presenting Open Studio 2, a dance performance and gallery conversation of Sister, premiering Wednesday, September 11th. Well, sorry, that's gone. Thursday, September 12th at 7:30. Choreographed by 2013 Doris Duke Artist recipient Terry O'Connor, featuring Cynthia Oliver and David Thompson. This is Live and Local with Kevin Kelly. I'm Vincent Strouth, filling in for him today. My guests are Gunther Schuller and University of Illinois Horn Professor Bernard Scully. Gentlemen, it has been so much fun sitting here and chatting and listening. We have a couple minutes left. And if you don't mind, let me run down the list of the lectures and forums
sure.
that are still available.
Yep.
And these guys had just come, in fact, from a U of I Jazz Department forum. They made their way over for this event this evening, 5 to 7 in the U of I Music Building. There's the masterclass for U of I horn students.
It's actually 5:30. It should be 5:30. It's okay.
Oh, thank you.
But they were announcing it.
5:30, and these are open to the public, right? These
yep.
are the events that they said were open to the
yep.
public. September 18th, forum for the U of I Composition Theory Department from 1 to 3 in the U of I Music Building, room 1201. There's the Miller Kamm Lecture, Günter Schuller, Life in Music, and Bernard is, it's going to be an interview. It's not a lecture. They'll sit and talk on stage and take questions from the audience. September 19th, the forum for the U of I Conducting Department, 11:30 to 12:30 in the Krannert Center's Orchestral Rehearsal Room.
Sorry, that should be the Great Hall.
Oh, you're going to do it in the Great Hall?
Yep.
Okay. Well, I guess they'd better fix the website at the... I get this off the... Okay. So it'll be in the Great Hall. Anyways. And then, of course, the big event. The 19th, same day, next Thursday, 6:30, pre-concert talk at the Allerton Barn Music Festival. It's Allerton Music Barn Festival. I always get it mixed up. And then, of course, the 7:30 performance of Günter Schuller's Quintet for Horn and Strings featuring Bernard Scully and the Jupiter String Quartet. Anything to add?
Hope everyone can come. It should be a great series of events.
One would think so as well. Speaking of the Allerton Music Barn Festival, here's a couple more events for the mentioning. Thursday, September 19th, it's called Jupiter Plus, and this is the program that includes the Günter Schuller Quintet for Horn and Strings, Mozart's String Quartet in D, K575, and the César Franck Quintet for Piano and Strings with Wuna Meng Piano. Friday the 20th at 7:30, Swing, Swing, Swing Clarinets. Ken Peplowski, former sideman with Benny Goodman, will join the U of I Concert Jazz Band under the direction of Joel Spencer to perform arrangements from Goodman's landmark 1938 Carnegie Hall concert on the occasion of its 75th anniversary. Saturday the 21st in the evening, William Hylas, pianist, will play Bach and Schumann, Bach's A Major English Suite, Schumann's Kinderszenen and Carnival. Then on Sunday, two times, a matinee at 2, one in the evening at 7, the concert version of Gershwin's Of Thee I Sing. What a great lineup for the Allerton Music Barn Festival. So we got a couple of minutes left. I have to say, it's been a pleasure to have you two here. How exciting for me to meet somebody who's written about so glowingly in my textbooks. Günter Schuller, the creator of third stream jazz and all that sort of stuff. Any great platitudes you can offer our audience going out besides come and listen?
I'm 87 now, and I'm kind of surprised that I am still so much in demand to write music. We call those commissions when somebody in the orchestra, you know, gets a hold of you and says, we want to write a piece, and then they pay me to do that piece. And they don't tell me what to write, just unless they say it's for symphony orchestra, right, which is obvious, or it might be for a piano trio. I've written 4 piano trios by now.
Oh, I'm a big fan of piano trios.
Never a horn trio. So fun. But anyway, so I'm happily busy. I'm composing 15, 16 hours every day, which is almost unheard of.
But it's what keeps you young. Isn't it what keeps us young as players and performers, doing the things that we like to do? Yeah. Do you prefer teaching or performing, or they both sort of work together to give you that
buzz? I think
they're
very integrated. So, I feel like since I've been here at the university, my playing's gotten exponentially better because I just you have to think about things in different ways. And you know, I would just say, when I worked with Günter, when I was mentioning back in 2009 when we played that quintet, that was really struck me working with you, is that throughout all these rehearsals, throughout the preparation of this, you know, quite challenging piece, his energy level was so high. Yeah. And I just thought, and every, you remember, like, every single event in your life, you can recall it. And I started thinking to myself, like, I want to be like that. I want to be, you know, 87 years old, and I want to have just the love of every minute of my life going on, you know, at all times. I mean, just loving every minute of it and being willing to take on new challenges and never never letting go of your dreams and hopes. It's just wonderful to see how well you've done, and it's an honor to have you here.
I guess the bottom line on all this is a four-letter word called love.
There you go.
Truly, truly. You know, the Beatles sang about it, and they were talking not just about, you know, romantic love. They really, in many of their songs, transcended that whole thing. They were talking about this big thing. You know, if you know the song the word is love.
Yeah.
And it's this huge philosophical thing. You know, we of course, are musicians. We love music. We know what it does for us. It's such a pleasure to share it with others and you know, as instructors and truly as a composer. As the old book says, do what you love, the money will follow. And you're proof of it. I look forward to, I don't know if I'll be able to make the events, but perhaps our listeners will.
Come to one of them.
I'll do my best. I'm a busy guy. You can well imagine. Sure. I work three jobs and all that good stuff. So my guests have been Gunter Schuller, thank you, and Bernard Scully. I'm Vincent Strahl, filling in today for Kevin Kelly on Live and Local. You're listening to 90.9 WILL-FM in HD Urbana with translator W293AF Danville. NPR and classical music for Central Illinois. WILL is a member-supported service of the College of Media at Illinois. Here's a look at our weather forecast for tonight. Mostly clear, cooler, low of 52 for Friday. Sunny, cooler, high of 68. North winds 10 to 15 miles an hour. Friday night, colder, mostly clear, lows in the lower 40s for Saturday. Sunny skies, highs, lower 70s. Saturday night, partly cloudy and a low of 52. Looking ahead, Sunday, partly sunny. There's a 30% chance of showers and thunderstorms. Highs in the lower 70s. Sunday night, mostly cloudy. Lows in the mid-50s. They've given me a weather forecast that gets me through Monday and Tuesday. Might as well offer that. Partly cloudy, highs, mid-70s, and lows in the mid-50s.